Welcome to Diabetes Unplugged. Welcome to this week's episode of Diabetes Unplugged. And if you don't know, this is the podcast where we shine light on life beyond the diagnosis. And we dare to redefine the way that we approach diabetes wellness, which if you have been listening to Diabetes Unplugged thus far, you know we do things very different over here than you are probably used to. Okay. Now, in today's episode, I'm going to be sharing with you guys four things that I stopped doing in order to lower my blood sugar. Now, if you have been here for a while, you guys know that I struggled with gestational diabetes when I was pregnant with my son, which now was like 8 years ago. And now I'm at this place in my life where I am eating and living my lifestyle in the form of, you know, a plant-based diet and plant-based nutrition and stress management and all these kinds of different things, the four pillars that I always talk to you guys about. When it comes to stabilizing your blood sugar levels. And the reason why I do that is because I am at greater risk of getting pre and type 2 diabetes because I started out with gestational diabetes. So in everything that I do, it is trying to make sure that I prevent the onset of diabetes in the future. Now, I am at greater risk. The greatest risk of me getting pre and type 2 diabetes is usually, and not just for me, but for any woman that has had gestational diabetes, it's typically within the first 5 years of giving birth. And so I am 7 years strong since my sugar baby was born. And I plan to continue this lifestyle and also continue to educate you guys on some of the steps that I took back then and also that I continue to take now to help keep my blood sugar in a stable range. You know what I mean? So these four things that I'm going to share with you guys today, I have used personally. And let me just tell you a little backstory because it, not even a backstory, but like a disclaimer type of thing. I think it'll be a disclaimer. I don't really know. But all that to say, I literally started out like many of you, which has been, you know, going through the process of exercising more, eating less, trying every diet under the sun. Like when I tell you, I have tried keto, I have tried paleo, I have tried Atkins, I have tried starvation, I have tried intermittent fasting, I have tried one meal a day, I have tried the carnivore diet, I have tried every style of eating that you could possibly think of, not even kidding. And each and every one of those diets or ways of living were just, they just did not sit right for me. They just did not work well for me. And I found that they just kind of put me in a state of mental stress and anxiety that really contributed to me going through 3 years of postpartum depression after giving birth to my son. So there was a lot that I experience because I was so fearful of diabetes and blood sugar and all kinds of stuff. And it was rough, man. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. It was a rough journey. So when I tell you I've tried it all and I've been through it all and all, like I've done it all. And so this episode means a lot to me because like I said, I'm going to share with you guys the four things that I stopped doing in order to lower my blood sugar, because these were like really big aha moments for me as I was going through my journey. And I think the biggest part for me was realizing that obviously I was navigating so much more than just being pregnant and gestational diabetes and postpartum depression and all kinds of stuff. There was just a lot of different things, but I think when it comes to us, you know, if you're in the thick of it, as far as like your journey of really just trying to reverse diabetes and stabilize your blood sugar and lower your A1C, it comes with a lot of like, oh, I got to try everything and see what sticks. And I think sometimes we really overcomplicate it. We really overcomplicate it, which is why I created the 5-day blood sugar reboot, which is a step-by-step 5-day process of literally just simplifying it, you know, just simplifying it. Especially because if you're anything like me, like I'm a research junkie. I am very much so a nerd. And I don't know if I present that way online, but I am very much so a nerd. I am the type of person that gets excited about reading research studies and articles. And like my sister the other day gave me a book called How to Reverse Heart Disease. And I was super excited. Like, I don't know if the average person gets excited about getting books like that. But because this is my passion, this is my love, this is everything for me. I just love what I do. I am a person that, you know, I research it all and I want to try all the things. And I, a lot of time, am the what do you call it? The test dummy source, so to speak, of a lot of the things that I come up with my programs and stuff like that. But a lot of times what can happen is, especially if you're a person that researches a lot, it becomes information overload. It becomes, you have all the information in the world. And a lot of times it's opposing information where it's like one thing tells you to do this, the other thing tells you to do something different. It's just a lot of information. And a lot of times it keeps you frozen and not wanting to try anything because you're like, what if I try this and it's not the right thing? So it keeps us from doing anything at all, you know? So I found myself in a lot of ways in my journey being that kind of frozen person that was just kind of like, oh my God, I feel overwhelmed with information. I'm not going to do anything. But then it's like on the opposite side of that, I want to try something because I want to be better. It is crazy. See, people don't talk about this when it comes to diabetes. We don't talk about why it is labeled as such a complex illness. Because there's so many layers to this thing and there's so many layers to try to reverse it. But I'm going to share with you guys how I simplified it today by stopping and discontinuing doing the very things that I was told to do or that, you know, through reading certain articles or whatever, it just was not working for me. It wasn't working for me. And as I started to understand insulin resistance and all those kinds of things, this started to make so much more sense. So the very first thing that I did was I stopped skipping breakfast. And this was huge for me because like I told you, I tried intermittent fasting. I tried all kinds of different, you know, one meal a day, all that kind of stuff. And those kinds of things, a lot of times the rules or the guidelines are like, skip breakfast, you know. I stopped doing that. Number one, because I like food. All right. But number two, by starting to eat breakfast again, this allowed my body to stop having to rely on stress hormones. And therefore, my blood sugar levels actually stayed a lot more stable. And a lot of people don't understand this, especially women. 80% of my audience is women. And so when we are trying to initiate things like intermittent fasting, or if you're a person that just simply labels themselves as not a breakfast person, a lot of times your body is having to rely on the stress hormone cortisol in order to create its own energy because you're not giving it the energy or the fuel from food in order to sustain itself. So, and that's not a good thing because what happens is now cortisol, like I said, it's the stress hormone. It's naturally highest during the day. And what is supposed to happen is as the day goes on and day turns into night, then it's supposed to taper off. But what happens is when you wake up in the morning and your body is expecting nutrients, it's expecting fuel from the food that you're eating, but you don't give it to yourself, it doesn't give it to your body has to create its own energy. And the way that cortisol does this is by increasing its output, obviously, and in increasing its output, then that communicates with your liver to then dump all of its stored glucose into your bloodstream. And then your blood sugar elevates, and that is what your body is running off of. And so you never want to put your body in a situation where it is having to create its own fuel. That's what food is for. The only reason why your body should be relying on the stored form of glucose that is in your liver, right? Because every time you eat, your body either stores it or uses it immediately. So the only reason why your body should ever be relying on that stored form of glucose is if you're in an emergency situation. If there's, for some reason, you're on a deserted island and you don't have access to food or something like that. You know what I mean? If your body is under a real threat, meaning, you know, you have to fight or flee something that is life-threatening, then it'll tap into that stored form of glucose in order to help you respond the way that it should. But on a normal daily basis, you know, and we could have the whole conversation about food access and stuff like that. That's not for this episode. But on a normal daily basis, we're talking about people that do have access to food and who do have the ability to determine, you know, what they're going to eat, when they're going to eat those kinds of things. You don't want to make it to where your body is having to rely on stress hormones, because then what ends up happening, and you could probably attest to this if you're somebody that skips breakfast, you are more likely to be munching and snacking and all kinds of stuff throughout the day. You're also really highly agitated. People start getting on your nerves. You know what I mean? And as soon as you become triggered, somebody, you know, pisses you off, you are going to the store and you're grabbing whatever your snack is, whether it's your gummy candy, your potato chips, your pretzels, whatever it is that you want, because your body is in a very high stress mode. It's very, very reactive. And so when I stopped skipping breakfast, I noticed, number one, I had a lot less brain fog. Let me tell you about brain fog, okay? There's nothing cute about being a 25-year-old at the time and not being able to, like, find your words or remember stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know how, like, you're in the middle of a sentence or a conversation with someone and your thoughts just leave you, or like you're looking for something and you can't remember or whatever. There is nothing cute about being that age and not having your memory. That is absolutely nuts. But that is what I was going through at that time, because, not saying that skipping breakfast was the only culprit, right? But I will say it's the stress in my body being in that extended state of stress that allowed me to just really deal with a lot more brain fog than what was comfortable for me. You know what I mean? Now, after a while, my body just, I don't know, not that I came to accept it, but it was just kind of like I had stopped eating breakfast for so long that it just felt like normal. But then I think after a while, I got tired of feeling like that. So I started eating breakfast again. And for me, I eat according to the circadian rhythm. So now breaking my fast includes consuming just fruit first thing in the morning in order to stimulate digestion and detox and all that kind of stuff. So that's the very first thing that I did, was I stopped skipping breakfast so that my body could become used to getting food and fuel from food. So that way my blood sugar levels could stay a lot more stable and be a lot less unpredictable, because now my body wasn't having to create its own energy. I was able to provide my body with energy and fuel so that way I could keep my blood sugar levels more stable. And that is the key right there. You want stable blood sugar levels. And so depending on what you're eating first thing in the morning, that's going to allow your body to create that stability. But it's all training too, right? You have to train your body, get your body used to eating breakfast again too. It wasn't the easiest thing, not gonna lie. It wasn't the easiest thing to go from not eating breakfast at all to now all of a sudden having breakfast every morning, because I didn't have an appetite, because I had trained my body to not have an appetite. So if you find that you're in this place right now where you're not a morning person, you may need to start small. And small might be just, you know, within an hour of waking up, having a piece of fruit, or having, you know, a yogurt parfait, or having, you know, I don't know, whatever, according to your eating style. You know what I'm saying? Just having a little bit of something and not feeling like you have to have this full, you know, big old meal, because you're not going to eat it. Your body has become accustomed to not eating in the morning, but it's important that you do eat in the morning in order to have more predictable blood sugar levels. The second thing that I stopped doing, and this was probably my favorite thing that I stopped doing, I stopped cutting carbs. I stopped cutting carbs. And honestly, instead, I started eating more carbs. I started eating more carbs. And this helped to increase my carbohydrate tolerance, which is a really, really big deal. It also gave me more energy. It helped me to prevent extreme fluctuations in my blood sugar levels that usually occurs with like restrictive diets. And this is what I'll say, like, you know how you just become so like carb hungry, but you're trying to do low carb or whatever, and it makes you want the carbs even more? That was me. Like, I was hangry all the time, because I wanted rice and I wanted beans and I wanted bread and I wanted that kind of stuff. Like, me and bread, I'm in love with bread. Give me all the bread. And so cutting carbs for me was It was like punishment. I hated it. And so when I said eating more carbs, this doesn't mean that I like went crazy and just started eating everything. I was very intentional about the types of carbs that I was eating. And so carbs in and of itself, you can be split, they can be split into two categories. So you have your simple carbs and then you have your complex carbs. And your simple carbs are basically anything, you know, made from white flour, white sugar, white pasta, white bread, all those kinds of things, because there's no fiber attached to them. Complex carbs, on the other hand, those come from all your fruits and your vegetables and your whole grains. So like any of your breads that are made from whole grains and whole wheat flour and your oats and your brown rice and millet and farro and all kinds of different stuff like that. And then you have, you know, your nuts and seeds and stuff like that. Like those have some carbs in it and, you know, those kinds of things. I started eating those in higher quantities. And that is what increased my carbohydrate tolerance. Carbohydrate tolerance is basically what you're dealing with right now as a type 2 diabetic, especially if you're in the beginning phases of your journey where it's like you eat something that's considered a carb. So let's say you eat a banana and all of a sudden your blood sugar just shoots up. It's crazy, right? That's because your body, because of insulin resistance, it is also dealing with carbohydrate intolerance, meaning that it has an intolerance to carbs. And when you eat carbs, your blood sugar is going to rise. However, carbs are not the reason why your blood sugar is elevated. The insulin resistance is the reason why when you eat those types of carbs, your blood sugar shoots up. Hopefully that makes sense the way that I described it. So your goal and my goal with no longer cutting carbs was to increase my body's ability to tolerate the carbs. And the only way I was able to do that is by reversing that insulin resistance. Insulin resistance means that your cells in your liver and your muscle tissues are clogged with fat. And so by increasing my carb consumption and decreasing my fat consumption, that allowed me to become more insulin sensitive and more carbohydrate tolerant. It also allowed me, because again, what we were saying in number one was that food is fuel for your body. So in eating more carbs, I had more energy because carbs are our preferred, our body's preferred source of fuel. Our body doesn't prefer to run off of fat or run off of protein. It prefers to run off of carbs. That is what gives our body energy. And so with dealing with postpartum depression, for sure, I was always tired. When I was not eating carbs, when I was on low carb and keto and all that kind of stuff, I was exhausted. And the brain, you talk about brain fog was crazy. I just felt sluggish. I felt really heavy. And I don't know if it was because I was eating large amounts of meat, which probably has something to do with it because your body digests that a lot slower, you know, but it's also really heavy. Like that remains in your system for way longer than it should. So, but I always remember feeling really tired. Just, I had no energy. And then because I had no energy and then I'm a new mom, I felt depleted all the time. You know what I'm saying? And so when I was doing the research, I learned about insulin resistance. I learned about the role of carbs. I learned that there were different types of carbs and that I shouldn't be afraid of them. And that even as a diabetic, we need carbs, right? You need all of the macronutrients. That is what helped me be a lot less afraid. And in the beginning, when you're increasing your carbohydrate intake, it is going to be scary because carbs do raise your blood sugar. But again, it's about learning the role of carbs and the types of carbs that you should be consuming. So that way you're like, all right, I'm going to eat more carbs, but I'm not going to go towards the simple carbs and the carbs that have no fiber in it. The reason why complex carbs are going to be a lot better is because they have that fiber, which is going to make it to where your blood sugar isn't rising so quickly, so fast. You can continue to make sure that your blood sugar levels stay more predictable, right? It's all about reversing the insulin resistance so that your body has the ability to tolerate more carbs. Before we continue today's conversation, I want to address something that might resonate with many of you in the diabetes community.
When diagnosed with diabetes, it's common to feel overwhelmed and resort to drastic measures like severe diet restrictions and excessive exercise. Yet this often leads to frustration, fear, and unpredictable blood sugar levels. I have definitely been there, and it's this unsustainable approach combined with the lack of guidance from conventional medicine that fueled my passion to create my 5-day blood sugar reboot program. This program has empowered countless individuals to naturally lower their blood sugar levels by 50 to 100 or more points in literally 5 days. Inside the 5-day blood sugar reboot, you'll discover an easy to follow blueprint that tackles the 4 pillars of diabetes reversal in a simplified, helpful, empowering, and achievable way. To learn more, join my free masterclass on how to naturally reverse diabetes and eliminate the need for diabetic medications and receive a special promo price off of my 5-day blood sugar reboot. Check out the show notes for more details, and let's get back into today's episode. The third thing that I did, and this was really huge for me. This was really huge for me, and I also find that this is really huge for a lot of the clients that I work with as well. The third thing that I did was I chose to stop feeling guilty about wanting to eat unhealthy foods. Let me explain this to you. For me, and what I find is very common in the diabetes community, is we automatically take on this mindset of restriction, and not just carbs, but enjoyable foods, foods that we just simply enjoy. And because we take on this mindset of restriction, it also means that we are restricting, you know, the amount of enjoyment that we have in our lives. You know, there will be times where I wouldn't go out to eat with, you know, my family because, you know, it would just tempt me to want to eat unhealthy food. Or I wouldn't want to, you know, have ice cream with my son because it was unhealthy. Or, you know, there's just different things and boxes, mental boxes that we kind of put ourselves into because we say, well, if I want to be healthy, I can't have this and I can't have that and I shouldn't eat this and this is bad. And we start labeling these foods like I'm a good, and not even just labeling the foods, but we label ourselves and our self-worth based on those types of food. So it's like, if I eat the salad or I choose the salad, I'm a good person. But if I choose the cookie because that's unhealthy, I'm a bad person. And so we start to connect our self-worth with our food choices, not realizing how much psychological damage that is doing to us. Because for me, and what I always tell everyone, I truly believe that you can live a healthy lifestyle while still enjoying life. And that includes consuming foods that are technically considered unhealthy. It is just knowing how to do those things without sacrificing your blood sugar levels. So now if I decide, hey, I really want some Oreos with a glass of milk after dinner today, I allow myself to have some Oreos with a glass of milk after dinner if that is what I want to do. Now it's going to be almond milk, but you know what I'm saying. I allow myself to have those just because I want them. But you know what? I also do, in addition to that, I remember the tools that I have. And all these tools I teach inside Dominating Diabetes Academy. So one of the tools that I have is, if I'm going to have the cookies, I'm not going to have it just on an empty stomach because I know how that's going to impact my blood sugar. So I have a few options. I can have it after a balanced meal. And the key word of that is balance. Balance meaning I include complex carbs and fiber, as well as protein and small amount of healthy fats in each meal. That's a balanced meal. So I can have my Oreos and my milk after I consume a balanced meal, because in doing so, I can make sure that my blood sugar stays in a healthy range while still getting what I want. I can also say, well, I'm not hungry. I don't want a whole meal, but I still want my cookies. So I can ask myself, okay, what can I add to this in order to be able to create a buffer so that when I have my cookies, my blood sugar isn't going crazy? So what I teach in DDA is, have what you want, but add what you need. So I want the cookies, but what do I need in addition to the cookies in order to make it to where my blood sugar stays more stable? So then we have to understand macronutrients. Our cookies are carbs every single day of the week. They're simple carbs. Like I was telling you in step two, you have those simple carbs that are going to be broken down really quickly by your body and cause your blood sugar to spike really fast. Or you have those complex carbs that are not going to be broken down really quick by the body, and therefore your blood sugar remains stable. So I have my Oreos. Those are going to be my simple carbs. What can I add to these Oreos in order to prevent a blood sugar spike? So what is missing? You got to ask more questions. What can I add or what is missing in order for me to be able to still have what I want, but add what I need, right? So I have my simple carbs. I'm missing some protein and I'm also missing some fiber and maybe even a little bit of healthy fat. So how can I add those? So maybe we're making a snack plate now to where I can still have my Oreos, but I'm eating with some other things as well to create that buffer. So for me, y'all know that I live a plant-based lifestyle. So for me, if I'm making a snack plate, I have my Oreos. I might have, my favorite thing is like carrots and raw broccoli with hummus. That's going to be my fiber, right? The hummus is also going to offer me some healthy fats, just depending on how it's made. I might also have, you know, some fruit with it. I might also have a handful of nuts with it. I might have, you know, different things like that to where I'm including all the macronutrients with my Oreo cookies. And then the last thing that I'm going to make sure that I do is practice what's called order eating. So order eating is where I'm being mindful of the order in which I'm consuming things. Because like I told you, I don't want to have my Oreo cookies on an empty stomach. Why? Because that's going to cause my blood sugar to skyrocket. But if I have it on my snack plate with my veggies and hummus and with my, you know, I don't know, my handful of nuts, I can practice order eating, which is going to be me asking myself, what order should I eat these snacks in to where I am preventing that blood sugar spike? So for me, I'm going to start with my veggies and hummus. And that doesn't mean I got to eat all the veggies and hummus, but I'm going to start there. I'm going to start that. I'm going to have a few pieces of that, chew it, swallow it, make sure my body has something to work on first. Then I'm going to have a couple, you know, not a couple handfuls, but I'm going to eat a few of my nuts, you know, or seeds or whatever I got going on there. Or maybe I'm having a protein shake. You know what I'm saying? I'll drink a few sips of my protein shake. Then I'll have an Oreo cookie. You know what I'm saying? So these are just some different tools that I had to learn and that I now teach about how can we still have what we want and enjoy those less than optimal foods, because there's always going to be something going on where it's food centered and it might not be the healthiest food, but how can I still consume this without feeling like I got to restrict or I can't have it or it's bad or whatever without sacrificing your blood sugar? There's a way to do it, but you got to know the tools. And so once I learned these tools, I stopped feeling guilty about wanting unhealthy foods. I know that if I want something, I can have it. It is just about being mindful of how I consume it. That's important. The last and final thing that I did was I stopped trying to change everything overnight. Of all the four steps, I think this was probably the most important. Now, if you listened to my very first episode that I ever released, Diabetes and Demons, you will have heard I gave a lot of the backstory on what my life was like pre-gestational diabetes. It was very unhealthy. It was very high stress. It was very neglectful. It was very, it just was unhealthy. It just wasn't sustainable at all. And so when I decided that I wanted to change my lifestyle, I did exactly what everyone else does. You think that you have to go from 0 to 100 overnight. You kind of take on this all or nothing mindset because you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then we set these unrealistic expectations where for me, it was like, all right, I'm going to go to the gym for an hour every single day. And I'm going to drink a gallon of water every day. And I'm going to, you know, do all these things. Like, y'all, when I tell y'all I was tripping, I was tripping. And then I was trying to be low carb on top of that. Like, you know what I'm saying? It just was not. It wasn't healthy. It wasn't sustainable. It wasn't any of that. And so when I decided to stop trying to change everything overnight, number one, this helped me to manage my stress levels a lot better. And it also prevented me from feeling completely burned out and restricted by making too many changes too soon. And like I said, that's a very natural thing that we do where we want to change everything so quickly because we think in doing so, that's going to give us the results we want. But we really just end up being miserable. I was miserable. I was just like, this looks so aesthetic when it comes to like you know, Instagram and seeing all the girlies going to the gym and, you know, getting their booties all plump and, you know, they got a six pack or a flat belly or whatever. I didn't even want a six pack. I just wanted a little, you know, a little flat belly type of situation. I just didn't want to look like I was like, you know, 6 months pregnant all the time. I wanted to lose weight. That was really big for me, you know, especially after having a kid. I was just like, all right, well, restriction, 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 because I just had a kid and I want to, you know, keep my snap back. Like that was very popular at that time. Everybody was talking about snapback. Girl, I didn't snap back to nothing. I snapped back into depression. That's what it was for me. But what helped me is when I really had to coach myself and be like, Medina, where are you at right now? This is where you're at. You are not the type of person that goes to the gym for an hour every single day. You're just not there. But what you can do is take your baby, put him in the stroller and go walk around the block for 30 minutes every day. So I started doing that. And that was little. It was little, but it made me feel like I was doing something and it prevented me from burning out. Like when I was burned out, like I was just done. It was stick fork in me. I am done. I don't want just nothing. I have nothing else left, you know, and this was me as a new mom, you know? And so I try even in my life today, and as I'm continuing on this journey today, one of the things that I am most mindful of is sustainability. And I don't guilt trip myself anymore about trying to make big and drastic changes because I want everything to be sustainable. Can I see myself doing this long term? And if whatever you're trying to do in your life right now, you don't feel like you can do it long term, that is an indication. Or if it's causing you a lot of stress, that is an indication that something needs to change. You have to change your plan of action. Another thing that I had to realize too was that just because something worked well for me in the beginning doesn't mean that that is what works well for me or is best for me at this point in my life. That was a really hard pill for me to swallow because I thought I would be doing things a certain way indefinitely, not realizing that as time goes on, we change and we evolve and our body chemistry changes, our body makeup and all of those composition, all of that kind of stuff, it changes over time. I am not the same person today that I was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And so what I was doing back then, it just doesn't always work for me now. Now I take a different approach. It's still rooted in the 80-20 rule for sure. It's still rooted in longevity, but it looks a little bit different and it's according to what my lifestyle is now. And so all this to say, I hope that you learn how to be gentle with yourself as you are learning how to navigate diabetes. All of the things and the rules that we think that we have to follow, the only thing that is the most important is doing it in a way that works for you and that you can see yourself doing in the long run. And sometimes I think, number one, we have so much information that's available for us on the internet to where it becomes really overwhelming. But number two, we kind of feel afraid of making the wrong decision because so many people are doing things in different ways and they found what worked for them. And it just feels really... it feels hard. Let's just call it what it is. It feels hard. And so the reason why I shared these four things that I stopped doing in order to balance my blood sugar is to show you, number one, that I am human and that I haven't always had it all together and I don't always have it together now, that I am still learning. I'm still learning, even after helping so many people reverse diabetes and improve insulin sensitivity, all that kind of stuff. I am still learning because even my journey is individual. It is individual. And what works for one person may not work for the next person. But I do hope that in sharing what I stopped doing, that it gives you a sense of hope that tells you, basically, I don't have to be restrictive. I don't have to do it in the way that everybody is doing or that it has been told forever by every Western medicine doctor that this is what you have to do. I can still live a healthy lifestyle while enjoying life. And it's okay if I take it one day at a time. It's okay if I don't lose 15 pounds in a month, but maybe I lose it in 3 months because that's more doable for me. When you think about, hey, I have a 15 pound, you know, weight loss goal, it's going to sound a lot easier to say, let me just worry about losing 5 pounds this month than it is to put pressure on yourself to lose 15 pounds in 1 month. So this journey has to work for you. And I just encourage you to figure out what is doable for you at this time in your life and what aspects of your journey and your habits and different things like that that you have going on right now, how are they making you feel? Do you feel more stressed out and more unhealthy than you ever had in your life because you're trying to put yourself in a box of certain rules and regulations? If that's how you're feeling, change it. Change it. That's all I have for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you for all your positive feedback. I love you guys. And I just thank you so much for rocking with Diabetes Unplugged. I love showing up each week with these episodes and just sharing what's on my heart. And you guys seem to be rocking with it too. So until next week, you guys take care of yourself. And I'll see you later. Bye. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Diabetes Unplugged. If you enjoyed this conversation, follow me over on Instagram to join the ongoing discussion sparked by this week's episode. You can find all my social media handles in the show notes, and you can also show love by simply giving me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And for more insightful blogs, support, and other digital downloads, head over to queeneatsnutrition.com. Until next time, take care and keep striving for your health goals. See you next week.